Welcome back to another episode of Ignite Your Power, the Kathy Mao podcast. Today's episode is one you'll want to lean all the way into because we're diving deep into the art of making powerful choices, building with purpose, and transforming adversity into impact. My guest today is Hussein Halak, a visionary entrepreneur, mentor, and father who has founded over 22 businesses across Syria, Dubai, and now Vancouver. But this episode isn't just about entrepreneurship, it's about truth. It's about what happens when you stop chasing success the way the world tells you to and start building something that actually matters. Hussein's mission is to create sustainable businesses, educational platforms, and a thriving global ecosystem that empowers others to rise. His upcoming book, The Dark Art of Life, is a raw and real look at how we navigate uncertainty, regret, and reinvention with wisdom, honesty, and heart. If you've ever felt like you're carrying the weight of big decisions or unsure if you're on the right path, this conversation will speak to your soul. So get ready to be inspired, grounded, and reminded of your own power. So let's dive in and say hi to Hussein. Hi, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. That's a wonderful introduction. I'll steal it. It's so good. Thank you for the introduction. I'm looking forward to
that. To you later. Yeah. So I know you lived in Syria and built businesses in Dubai and now thrive in Vancouver. Can you take us back to the beginning and share how your upbringing shaped your view of life and success?
Absolutely. So I grew up around in a very, I would say, tribal kind of environment where you're surrounded by your family, surrounded by people. You're always surrounded by people who are extended family, friends, and they're always meeting every day. You know, like today we meet on social media, but at that time, you basically people come together. And for me, the most interesting part is to kind of show up. For me, I'd love to be part of those adult conversations. It was like if being accepted. And it was like the joy of my life for when my father or my uncle would sit me around and I get to listen in to them while the other kids were playing, mainly because not all the time they were nice to me. So I would enjoy being around my father and my uncle. And that kind of shaped how I thought. The things I was engaged in and the things that matter to me. So by the time I was around like the university kind of level, I wanted to be something else. I was writing. I wanted to add something of value to the world. But there was no future for someone in Syria, and I can explain that to you. But basically, when you were in Syria, you can't be anything more than, you know, maybe you'd buy a house, maybe you'd get a car and get a wife, and that's it. There's no, you know, you can be an astronaut or you can be president. Those things did not exist. So in many ways, that may be like, oh, well, we didn't think about the future or have big dreams. But in other ways, that anchored me in the moment and kind of shaped how I think about the world.
Wow, that's incredible. Thank you for sharing your story. And it's funny how you say that, because my childhood is very similar, where we always had family come over, we're so close. And so I can talk to my aunts and uncles and my parents, and then I can also talk to my younger cousins and hang out and do that thing. But I was always interested in the conversations that the parents were always having. And it just shows like how you really want to make an impact, and you start being more aware and conscious of like, okay, there's more to just playing or just doing certain little tasks at a younger age, which is pretty cool. But that's so crazy. In Syria, really, you can't do anything else. So then is that why you wanted to go somewhere else where you had more opportunities? How did that happen for you?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in a dictatorship or an authoritarian environment, and mostly at the time the government kind of owned most of the things, or there were some big businesses, but they were friends of the government. And in many ways, you also not just the condition in Syria, it's also how you think about business. at the time, I didn't know what an entrepreneur is. I didn't know that it was possible to build your own business. It was just, for me, work was a means to getting money. So I ended up working while I was in university to pay for myself. I chose engineering because I wanted to see a computer to work on it. And to give you an idea, an engineer in Syria at that time gets paid $100. And so it meant that to get a computer, let's say $1,500, that means you have to wait for a year and a half to be able to buy a computer. It's like, imagine if you wanted to buy a computer and a computer is $150,000. That's basically it. So it's not accessible. So I chose engineering because I love technology. And I thought to myself, well, I know how to draw and I know how to write. So I'll do these things by myself. And but then I used them to get some money while I was in university. By the time I graduated, I already had a consultancy company. But it wasn't because I was entrepreneurial. It was somebody saw that I was doing the work as a freelancer and said, hey, come partner with me. So most of the time, a lot of the moves that I made were not something that I planned on or wished for or say, this is my goal. Mostly because whatever I could manage in the moment was what I worked with. So I was kind of mostly about the opportunities that existed in front of me. And I would jump from one opportunity to the next. And that led to me doing like a gazillion things. So in many ways, it was great. But in many ways, it was a reason. It was driven by the idea that I didn't have big hopes. My hope was to be a rock singer at the time. But that was not possible in Syria. It was mostly dominated by Arabic music. And you don't have access to the music industry that was mainly in the US.
Wow. That's so crazy. But that's amazing that you were able to grasp all the opportunities that you had and you were able to just work with that and just shows like your character and how able you're able to do all these different things, because being a freelancer is tough because you just take on projects and you're just like not focused on one thing. And it's just like whatever they throw at you, you're like, okay, I'm going to make this happen. And you're doing it for like multiple people. That's amazing.
Good. Well, for you. Thank you. I didn't know any better. I think a lot of times I talk with it shaped my idea and it shaped also my book, is that a lot of times for me, it was that I didn't know any better. So I didn't know that what I was doing didn't adhere to a standard. I have to remember that at that time, there wasn't that much internet. And even when we got access to the internet, there wasn't that much about, you know, standardized of the business. You didn't have YouTube. You didn't have, you know, all of that publication, the content revolution where people shared about their work. So I didn't have anybody to compare myself to. In many ways, that kind of led me as like, whatever I was doing worked. If somebody was willing to pay for it, that's great. That's all I needed to know. Yeah. So I wasn't hindered by, well, there is this standard, and if I don't live up to it, I shouldn't do this work, being a perfectionist at least. But so that gave me the opportunity that I didn't know any better. And so I just ventured into something. What's the worst can happen? I would learn something or I would fail. That's the worst that can happen.
I like how you mentioned that, though, like you didn't have a standard to go by. So you just did it anyways, because you had so much confidence in yourself. Or even if you didn't have the most confidence, you're like, I don't know, I'm just going to try it and see where it takes me. But nowadays we struggle with comparison and the imposter syndrome, because you're like, somebody else did it and I can't do that. Or right. Yeah. Like hold ourselves back. So that's awesome that you got to have that opportunity to just go for it and learn all these skills and just do it. So is that how you founded over 22 businesses? Like, what were some of the lessons from your earliest ventures, and did any of them surprise you?
Yeah, the funny thing is that I didn't know the meaning of a word entrepreneur until, I think, 2006. And by then, I already founded like around 12 businesses. What happened is my first tech company, so I had a consultancy, but then I started a tech company. I didn't know it was a tech company. We just had an opportunity with someone that I was talking to. He said, well, there is this company called Spacetoon, which is the Disney of the Middle East, if you wish. And he said, well, they want a website. So I hired a group of people that none of them built a website before. I never built a website before. And we went and built for Spacetoon in 3 months a website that is a game-driven website. So they loved it so much that they acqui-hired the whole team and they gave me a position in Dubai. I had no idea this is going to happen. I was like, okay, go along with it. I get to be in Dubai. And then when I moved there, the vice president who architected the deal left the company in 3 months, which meant that I was there and there was nobody knew what to do with me. So I was like, I'll jump into project teams. And inside Spacetune, I ended up founding or helping them build 10 companies inside. So I was an entrepreneur per se. And it was just because I would jump in, and if something I didn't know at the time, I used to read quite a bit because the engineering part of me, you're an engineer, you never do something without reading about it. So whenever I wanted to do something in business, I would go read as many books I could find. I would scour the internet. That made me, when I joined a team, now I didn't know any better. I didn't know that I was doing something that is great, but that made me one of the most informed people to work with. And people fought over me as teams, and I ended up working on 10 companies. And that shaped us like, okay, this is actually a good thing. I used that and I started my hunger for knowledge. I used that to make it as an unfair advantage for me. I would enter into any room and I would be the most informed, the most well-read, even though I haven't worked with customers as much as the other people, but I would have learned about the people or from people who have worked in the field far more than them.
Yeah, that's incredible. I really truly believe that knowledge is power, though, because the more you learn about something, a subject, it makes you more empowered in a way, because you know different aspects of the whole concept or whatever you're trying to learn. And so that's incredible that you took that. And the thing is, everybody can really do that. Everybody can read and
100%
be knowledgeable, but they're just either too lazy or they make excuses or they're just unaware that knowledge is power. And so thank you for sharing that. That's something that you did to make you stand out, to make you like have people want to fight over you. And that's the best feeling. That's really incredible.
Yeah. Funny enough, some people think of reading as like something you like doing. You say some people like reading, some people don't like reading books. The way I think about it is think about it as training rather than reading. So don't think that you're reading books or whether you like it or not. If you want to excel at what you do, think of reading books as training or doing the work. I was talking with one of my future partners, and he was telling me like he struggles to read books. I said, you struggle because you don't think of it you think of it as something you like or you don't. When you think of an outcome that you want, you're willing to go through the struggle. I mean, everything in life is a struggle. Everything you want to do is a struggle. There's work involved to get to an objective. You may not like the work itself. Now I don't like exercising, but if I want to get thinner, get more healthier, I have to exercise. So I said, get interested in the result and do the work needed to get to the result. And that way you will learn to read books and think of them as training. So that may help people who want that kind of perspective.
I love that perspective. Thank you for sharing that. I truly believe that, because if you don't even change that perception or the mindset to want to do that activity, you're not going to do it. You're not going to accomplish it. So
100%.
Change the narrative, change the perception. That's really what it is. So how did you find all these different opportunities to get to where you are? Because I feel like most entrepreneurs struggle with finding the opportunities or different avenues to get to where they are. They're always either stuck or stuck in that imposter syndrome. Space, right? We talked about the imposter syndrome, but it seems to me like you're always finding opportunities and just creating such an amazing momentum in life for yourself.
Yeah, thank you for that. I have three secrets for doing this, which is number one is the training or reading as many books as possible, because that kind of gives you an unfair advantage at any room you're entering. I see a lot of people, let's say, when they sit with CEOs or when they sit with people who are far more informed or skilled than they are. But when you read a ton of books, you're actually informed about their way of thinking. And you read from other CEOs and other people who built, you know, massive companies who otherwise you may not meet. So that's the first component. But the second component, as you said, is that to find those opportunities is knowing as many people as possible. So the other unfair advantage you can have for yourself is to reach out to people and know as many people. Now, we're generally know how to talk to people, and it's about a conversation. Many people think of this as networking or building a network for a purpose. I would think about it as, you know, being human, as being human, you need to surround yourself with other humans and people who know, like, and trust you. And you can do that simply by just having conversations. Don't try to make it be like, I'm knowing these people just for the sake of, you know, getting a job or signing a contract. Just get to know people and think about it as like a bullseye. At the center of that bullseye are the people that you're going to either become your dear friends or become your customers or become people that are an important part of your life. But in the outer circles, there are all the people that know them. So when you know a lot of people in their sphere, those relationships are deepened by default. Because when I know you and I know the people around you and I know the people around them, I become somebody that, oh, I know someone who met you, let's say, for a cup of coffee, or I know someone who said that it's wonderful to, let's say, meet you. And that really uplifts the relationships and removes this imposter syndrome, because you don't have to pretend. You generally go and have good conversations with people. You don't have to ask them for anything. You just have a, you know, a nice cup of coffee, and that will change kind of the dynamics. And I'll tell you about the last secret, but I want to give you a chance to answer. So that's, if you're asking me where the opportunities, most opportunities come from people. And the more people you know, the more opportunities that come in.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. So a lot of people network, and now what's really popular is called coffee chats. But what I struggle with, though, or a lot of people I've noticed, is either you're an introvert and you're just trying to network because you know that's what you need to do, which makes it unfun. So when you said, just thinking of it on a human level, like, that's amazing, because it does shift that perception again, right? Like, making a new narrative, which is very good. But as an introvert, I guess during the conversation, like just a coffee chat, what would you usually chat with people about? I guess that would be something that I'm curious about, because you strike a conversation, it's usually like, oh, what do you do? I don't know, like, how's your family or how's the weather? Like, those are like the three main things that I've noticed, because I've been in a lot of coffee chats. And we have pretty much talked about the same thing. And then I was like, how do you actually get more in depth to understand people? And I feel like I struggle with that sometimes. And I'm sure a lot of other entrepreneurs struggle with that as well. So how do you navigate that when you're in coffee chats?
Funny enough, I used to think that people who are the, you know, the outgoing, the people who are, you know, the people who are, you know, extroverts are the best at networking. The opposite is true. The introverts are the best at networking. That's a perception. So why introverts? Because introverts are great listeners. And the perception that to network, you need to speak is exactly the opposite. To network, you have to listen. People get interested in you or find you interesting if you're interested in them. So what you want to do in a coffee chat, just ask questions, get to find out a person. Like, what I'll give you a simple example. One of the people that I met first when I moved to Vancouver, and kind of the relationship with them has completely impacted my life in a big way. It was mostly about, like, hey, what are you working on right now? And then when they tell you, it's like, what makes you, like, why do you do that work? And what makes you so passionate about it? And what excites you about that? So you start asking questions just like what you're doing right now. And the more you're listening in, and because introverts are not waiting to say something, they are mostly, you know, listening, and they try. It's, if you find something interesting in what they're saying, ask more, go deeper. And people love that, because if they would feel that you've had a great conversation, and they will remember that. People will not remember what you said to them, but they will always remember how you made them feel. And if you made them feel listened to, they will remember you more than anybody else. They won't remember somebody, you know, who's talking a lot and who's great at talking about themselves, because, you know, like, that's boring. But they would remember someone who's got interested in them and ask them all these, you know, interesting questions. So just get interested in the person, be genuinely interested. And that's the other thing. Never go for a coffee chat for someone that you don't like and you don't find interesting. Don't go for a coffee chat for someone just because they have the position, or just because, you know, they're someone that other people find interesting, or just because you want something from them. Go to a coffee chat because you're really interested in learning about the person, and it will come to you naturally because you're interested.
I love that. I love that so much. That is so true. Thank you for saying that. That is true. And I feel like a lot of people, again, just do coffee chats because they feel like they need to, but finding the right people to do it with. And I always tend to forget this, or when you are an entrepreneur, you spend a lot of your time and energy on things you think you need to do, but not things that you should really do, right?
So true. So true.
That's what came to my mind when you said all these things. I'm like, you're intentionally trying to really understand and care about a person. And that is so much more powerful than just sitting there just talking about yourself, or really not even interested in thinking, okay, this time is draining. Like, why even make that time and do that, right? Because in the end, it's just not going to be a positive outcome. So thank you 100%. For sharing that. That's really good. I love your perception. I'm glad that we're doing this and I get to pick your brain, because these things really, I feel like it's very common and we don't really talk about these things as entrepreneurs. We always try to show what works or what is working or what's the good stuff, right? We don't really talk about what we're struggling with. But most of us are struggling with this, like just very common, simple things. But I feel like as an entrepreneur, you want to show like, I am a boss and I don't struggle with these basic little things. But I'm here to say, hey, I struggle with it. Even though I'm a boss, I don't care. Like, these are things that I see that is so common. If I'm struggling, I know like millions of other entrepreneurs are struggling too. So amazed by that. That's really, really good. Thank you for that. So what is your number three out of your three secrets? I want to know the third one.
For sure. The third secret is I do work like I'm paid $1 million. So this is, I call it the $1 million rule. And the idea is whatever you do, see, when we do work in life or when we commit to commitments, it's natural as a human to kind of evaluate that commitment. Let's say I have a meeting with you and then I have another meeting. We evaluate the importance and we give most of our time and energy to the things that are more important. And in work, what we do is like, if somebody's paying me, let's say $1,000 and somebody's paying me $10,000, I would give more attention to the person or to the account that is giving me $10,000. That, unfortunately, what it does, it impacts our brand and the trust that people have with us significantly, because it's then dependent on the pay or the value that then we're inconsistent in how we show up in the world. And I solved that for me a long time ago. And I didn't know it would make this impact, but this is how I show up in the world. I either do it or not. And if I'm doing it, I'm doing it as if I'm paid $1 million. I don't care if you pay me nothing. I don't care if I'm doing it as a favor. I'll show up and I'll work at it as if I'm paid $1 million. So I usually, when I used to work with my team, I say, after the signature is done on the contract, I'll remove the contract. I will not look at it again, unless that we have to. And then I will go to work with all that we have. And what that created is consistency. I would say to anyone, like, look past my history of 20, 25 years of work, and you won't find any of my clients who would tell you, well, you know what, Hussein or did less or whatever. Everybody would agree that we've done everything we can. Like, I'm always dependable. I'm always the person that you would want in a project. And that created consistency that the moment Hussein is involved, that's it. We forget about it. They don't worry about it. Like, I love to hear that from my client. And it means the world to me. And that is why you should work with people that you like, because if you don't like, or you don't like the work that you're doing, you can't do that. So when you like it, you put all your effort into it. And that creates consistency in the personal brand, consistency when show up. And it's also very easy for you, because you don't have to balance and say, how much they pay me again? How much they give me? You just go all out and deliver at your best. And it fulfills you as a person. So that was my third secret. So learning, know as many people as possible, and do your work as if you're paid $1 million.
Oh, I love that so much. I'm going to use that now. I'm going to take those three steps.
Please do.
And apply it. That is so true. But I'm the same way. I feel like even if somebody paid me, I wouldn't even care, because I love the work that I do. And I'm going to have integrity and show up the best and give my best. Everybody's going to get that fair share, no matter who you are or what you do, right? So I love that about you and how you said that. Show up do it like you're getting paid $1 million. And most of us don't. We don't do that.
Yeah. Right? A good example of looking at that, if you look at athletes, I mean, when Michael Jordan shows up on the court, he shows up as Michael Jordan. He's not like, well, who we're playing against today? Oh, okay, I'll show up like half the effort or quarter of the effort. No, that won't work, because then people will not see you as Michael Jordan. So this is another way of looking at it. Look at the greatest people in the world. They always show up as the greatest people, no matter who's on the other side.
True. That is so true. And another example is Kobe Bryant. Like, yeah, he will not back down. He doesn't care. He always tried hard and persevered. And then he became one of the greatest basketball players, right? Like, that is a really good example. Thank you for sharing that. I love that. So how did you learn to transform adversity into purpose, especially when things didn't go as planned?
With a lot of hard work. I think you have to surround yourself with a lot of great people that pull you out of that. Because at the end of the day, as much as I like to think I'm awesome, you know, and I'm capable, but we're human beings. We have our ups and we have our downs. And I think the idea of surrounding yourself with enough people, and it doesn't have to be like, you know, everyone, but a few people in your life that hold you accountable to a better you. And if you take the time to also look at what your responsibility is. So one of the biggest things that we do that actually kind of destroys our world is giving away our power. And what I mean by that is when I say, for example, let's say we're having a conversation, it doesn't go well. It's like, it's Kathy, you know, she didn't ask the right questions, or she did this or she did that. What I'm doing is I'm giving away my power and my responsibility. Now, I may be right. The other person may have simply, or the world may be conspiring against me, and I've done everything. But the moment I give away that responsibility or accountability, I can't change anything, because I'm depending on the other person. And how many of us, you know, we've been wronged in our lives. Somebody did something wrong, and we say, well, that person needs to apologize. That person needs to do that. And then we carry that burden for decades. Years, and it's like, okay, I'm mad at that person and they never apologize, when we could have easily said, well, what is my role in this? What do I want? And I use that a lot with my son and daughter. I said, okay, I get it, the other person did, you know, horrible thing. What do you want? And when you ask yourself that, what you're doing is a few things. Number one, you anchor yourself in the moment, because you're no longer stuck in the past and what people did to you, or what the world has kind of did for you, or the circumstances. You're now in the moment. What do you want? You're asking yourself. And the second thing is, the question is, what are you going to do about it? So this is what you want. So what are you going to do to get it? So if I want a good relationship with Kathy or with someone else, what do I want to do about it? And what is my responsibility? So I might say, well, I should tell that person, this is what I want, and maybe we can figure things out. And that gives you so much power over the situation, gives you the choice. And that gets you out of everything, even the things. And I don't mean like it resolves things, but what it gives you the power to at least find a path towards something different. As long as you give away your power, there's no path out of it and you're stuck in it.
Yeah. And this is what I call being trapped in the victim mentality, where you think the world's against you, where everything's against you, and you're giving your power away to that circumstance or the circumstances or people 100%. That are affecting you. And wow, I love that perception. It is absolutely true. So getting out of the victim mentality and empowering yourself and being like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to change it. I'm going to either forgive, let go, move on, or you choose, right? You're choosing to not forgive and to hold on to that. And it's like, no, let's just get rid of the energy, get rid of it. You don't need it, and just move on. What's the
point? And caution, it's not easy. It's like, it's easier to blame the world than to take responsibility, because that's a huge burden. Because when you know your life is your responsibility and you can change things, yes, there is power in that, but there's also a lot of responsibility. And so some people don't want to deal with that. And I get that. And it takes time. Like when I said that, that doesn't mean like tomorrow things would be better. One of the, like, I remember in 2006 when I had lost my second tech company and lost $1 million doing that, it took me 3 years to recover. So yes, it's great to have that power, but it's also a hard path towards recovery. But it's a path. It's better than, you know, getting stuck there for decades. And I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really tough to overcome, but then you came out of it sooner than later. But see, you're being aware and not being stuck in the victim mentality. You're just like, you let it soak in, and then you take responsibility and action into going forward. Okay, what next? What am I going to do next? And that's all you can really do in life when everything 100%. Happens. So, which is great to the next question. So you talk openly about making tough decisions, some that didn't feel right. How do you personally deal with regret, and what advice do you give to people stuck in fear of making the wrong choice?
Ooh, I don't regret anything, honestly. I'll tell you how. Yeah, and the reason is the idea of choice. So there are several ways. Number one, I'm very clear that I can't change the past. Mm-hmm. So whether I did the wrong thing or the right thing, right now, it doesn't matter anymore. That's the reality of it. Like, it's not a mindset or anything. It's just a reality. Like, whatever I did in my past, I can't change it now at all. So the first thing I do is like, what do I want from it? And if I want to learn from it, I examine it. I take the learning. If I want to cry over it, I'll cry. And I mean, just to be clear, that this is not about perfection or being the perfect person or always having the answers. If I want to cry over something and feel like I'm a victim, I give myself, you know, an hour to do that, or whatever it is, like maybe a day, and like, okay, that's what I'm going to be. And I'm going to wallow in my sorrow, but I give myself that. And it's what I'm doing at the moment is choosing how I deal with it. And even the choice that maybe for others saying, well, why even cry over it, you know, for an hour at all? It doesn't matter. What matters is that it is my choice. And when I've made that choice, I was like, okay, I've had that happened to me, and I did cry over it, or I did, you know, like, I don't know, throw some stuff around, and now I'm here. What do I want? Again, anchoring myself in that, and that kind of removes the hold that the past on me, because regret is always nothing but the past having a hold on you. And you're never going to live in the present if you're always regretting what happened, because you can't change it. It's just a matter, like, it's just a fact that I can never change. So that's how I regret nothing. And I was like, okay, what do I want for the future? Because that's something I can impact right now. And so I pour all my energy into it. And I think another way of looking at it is being very practical. I want a lot of things for my life. And honestly, when you have a desire for life, you don't have any time to waste it in these kind of things. So I never hold a grudge. I never, you know, I'm sad of someone. If I'm sad of someone, I'll come to them and say, hey, I didn't like how you did this. And I would love for us to have this feeling rather than that feeling. And we resolve it. And these kind of things really help. Like a good example is you'll be sitting with someone. We've all done it. We say a word or we say something and we regret it. And suddenly, I don't know if it happened to you, you're stuck in your mind thinking about, I shouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. And you're now stuck in this. But the person is right in front of you. I could have easily said, hey, you know, I'm sorry I did this. How can I make it better? And now I'm actively fixing it rather than stuck in my head, I shouldn't have done this, because I know I can't change it. So this is kind of a practical approach that I don't know how I developed it, but it just, this is the way I am right now. And it just makes my life so much easier. And I have so very little, you know, challenges and grudges and you know, being sad of someone. I mean, I remember, I don't think that me and my wife had ever had a fight for the last 10 years that lasted more than a day, maybe two at the max. And we immediately back and we resolve it and we talk it through.
That's impressive. That's really amazing, because that really shows the type of character and how confident, powerful you really are, because to actually face things head on, it's really hard for people. And So instead of, like what you said, instead of being in your mind, you just take action and then you just resolve it or try to resolve it instead of playing it in your mind, I shouldn't have, or, you know, so there is no regret. So do you feel like that helps you just make choices in general? Because a lot of us get held back on making the wrong choice. But even though you may think it's a wrong choice, it's just going to be a choice. And if you just make either or, it doesn't matter. It takes you down a route. And if you go down that route, you're just going to have to curve and just figure it out. It doesn't matter. It'll lead you back to where you're supposed to be. So I think people really get stuck. And if I take this route, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Or if I take this route, is it wrong? You know? So we get stuck in that. So how do you just not make choices, or you just make the choice and you're just like, okay, I'm going to make it and see where it takes me?
I think you touched on a bunch of things that are really important. One of them is this idea that that I think is anchored in our how we grew up. So when we grew up, you know, when we're trying to walk, you know, like a 1 year baby, we fall our way to walking. If you've seen any baby, they're mostly falling, you know, like falling and then they stand up and then they try to take one step and they fall. But what do the parents do? Hey, great, you know, awesome. They cheer them on, they celebrate them, and they take another step and another step. So they're falling their way to walking. Instead of, imagine if the parents said, you know, this walking thing is not for you. You're mostly falling. Stop doing it. But I think around five, it's funny if we think about it, but I think around five or seven, our parents start exploring the world more. You know, we run around, we might run into the street. So in an effort to protect us, what the parents do is like, don't do this, don't do that. You have to get things right. Suddenly, it's no longer about experimentation and exploring the world. It's more about getting things right. And we go to school. And what is school? We study for a whole year so that we can get things right, because that's the only way to move to the next year. So everything in our lives is built around getting things right and making the right choice. And, succeeding has to do with spending a ton of time in order for us to, when the time comes to make those choices, to make the right choices. Life doesn't work that way. Life is about experimentation. The only way, imagine if you had to, you know, play a game, and in order to play that game, you go and study for several months about that game before playing that game. It doesn't make any sense. What you do is you, you know, shoot some hoops, or, you know, shoot some balls, or play on the PlayStation for a little bit, and you see, do I like it? Do I not? And then you decide to spend more time based on the experience of the time that you spent. And that is how we are as human beings. So when I realized that, it became clear to me that in order for me, first of all, I'm never going to make the right choice, because there is no such thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I make this choice or that choice, how things will pan out. There's many times that I made the choice that seemed like the right choice by any standard. I took the time, the energy to make the right choices, and things completely blown up. What is it? We raised funding 2 years ago. We raised like $4 million. And what ended up happening, the market in 2022, if you remember 2023, the market completely collapsed. There was like Silicon Valley Bank, and it's something we couldn't have. Everything was right for us. It was our biggest raise ever. It was with an investor. We had the right team, everything. But the market collapsed. So even when everything you do is the right choice, the world may not agree with you. So the best scenario is to make a choice. And then if it doesn't work, you make another choice. And if it doesn't work, you make another choice, and another, another, another. So that is what I've learned. So the faster you make those choices, speed, making those choices and making smaller choices in shorter periods of time, rather than, you know, the bigger choices that, you know, that impact like what a career, choosing a career for 20 years. And that is how I deal with making choices. And it's, so far, it has served me really well, because it minimizes the impact, and it also allows me to be extremely fast and capitalize on opportunities that are right in front of me.
Well, I love that. I love that perception so much. I'm just laughing because when you're saying that, I was like, dude, I do hold myself back, because in our environment, like what you said, school teaches us that we have to get things right. And I hold on to that concept so hard sometimes. And it's like, why can't I just let go and just let life take me where I am, where it needs to be? And the funny thing is when I let go and allow it to happen, just experience, it's really great. And when I try to control a situation, it does not happen. So just for example, like I went through infertility and I wanted things to go a certain way with trying to create my baby or have my baby. And then it didn't work out. I had a miscarriage. And then right when I let go and I was like, you know what? F it. I don't even care. I don't want to do this baby making thing anymore. And then that was when I was able to have my child. So like life literally happens when you let go and you just live it. So I love that. So
There's a metaphor I like, which is being a captain in the sea and you're on your ship. So if you look at the sea will do what the sea will do. It doesn't care. Like life doesn't care about us because it's not bad. It just doesn't, because it will do what it will do. You know, the sea will do what the sea will do. It might throw everything at you, or it might give you the smoothest ride ever. All you can do is deal with the wave that is right in front of you right now. You can't, you know, dream about you. If once you step outside of yourself and you're somewhere, you know, trying to make the right decision and taking your time, what's happening is life is unfolding in the moment and you're not dealing with it. So what you do is you deal with the wave right in front of you. And that's what we try to make the decisions far more important than they are. If I make this choice about the job right now, what does this mean for me 20 years from now? Like, you know, we try to make that the career, the decision I make about the job that I do right now will impact what I do in 20 years, which is not true. Or the study that I do, you have no idea what's going to happen in a year from now. We had no idea that the world is going to be where it is right now. I mean, if you look at the world today and 6 months ago, it was a completely different world.
Yeah.
So you have no control and you have no idea how things are going to unfold. Treat the decision right in front of you for what it does in the moment. If this is what you want right now, if it aligns with you, if it's something that serves you, if it's something that you feel something about, go for it. And you know, if it doesn't work a month from now, you can make a different choice. You don't have to worry about being guilty or something. Just make the choice that is the best in the moment rather than the choice that's going to be best in 20 years because you don't know. Not because you can't, because just simply you don't know if you're real and honest with yourself.
No, that is so powerful. And it does take away of a lot of time of just contemplating like, oh, am I making the right choice? No. You know, and then thinking like, if I make this choice, what is going to happen? Yeah, 20 years from now, you really wouldn't know. You just mm-hmm. do it. That is really, really good advice. So thank you. And I know many entrepreneurs chase profit, but you've chosen to build sustainable businesses and educational systems to uplift others. Why is that mission so important to you?
Because I think at the end of the day, I wanted to be, I mean, it's for me. I was lucky that early in my life, I got everything that I wanted. But in Syria, as I've told you, like an engineer salary is $100 a month. After getting some jobs, I got to generate $1,000 per month. Now, for people right now, like that live in North America, $1,000 a month is not a lot. But at that time, it was like 10 times the salary of an engineer. So imagine like making $100,000 a month. Or $50,000 a month. That's basically what I was making. So I got more money at the time than I could ever spend doing anything. So I got to experience what that money is. And after you get in it and the joy of having money, then after that, like, okay, I wanted something more. I wanted to be in a band and I got to play and to sing in the top bands, top rock bands in Syria. Not a lot. It's not like, you know, Rainbow or Deep Purple or anything. But at the time, it was the highest thing that I could do at the time. I got to work with some of the best people in the market that I was in. I mean, Spacetoon at the time, imagine working at Disney. That's what I got to work. So I got to achieve all of those. And after achieving all of those, I realized that just like climbing a summit and reaching the summit of Mount Everest, you have to come down. You can't stay at the summit because there's no oxygen there. So when you accomplish something, the importance of that thing goes down with time and you look for something more. And for me, it was search for something more meaningful to me. Now, I'm not saying everybody has something meaningful for them and whatever that is. But for me, I wanted something more meaningful. And that's what that search led me to. And I found when I'm helping others and I'm uplifting others, I feel the greatest thing, because every time I hear about their success and every time I see them, you know, accomplishing something in life, I would feel happy again. So it was like, you know, free boost of, I don't know, dopamine or, you know, feel of joy that I don't have to do anything about. It's like, okay, so if I uplift other people and I help them, every time they do something great or every time that that community benefits, I'm benefiting. Now that's a sure, you know, a sure formula for joy. And I was like, okay, I want more of that. And that's what led me to being, that's what I mean by sustainable. It's that something that it sustains itself. It continues to give you even after you stop working towards it. And that's what I wanted. Even though I won awards, I achieved some things, there was always an underlying, and I found that education and training people and helping people achieve what they want was always so rewarding. I would bump into people years after and say, you taught me whatever, and because of you, I did this, I did that. I was like, okay, that's so rewarding. And to feel some that I impacted somebody's life in a positive way was, it's indescribable. And I wanted more of that. And selfishly, I wanted more of that. And that's what drove me that down that path.
I love that mission, because that's a lot of entrepreneurs, or especially coaches like me, you really want to just help other people and you're just passionate of making and changing people's lives, which is so rewarding. It really is. And it's not like it's an amount dollar or something that brings you joy. It really is seeing the smile on their face or seeing their life changing for the better, or just even changing a perception. Mm-hmm. How they see the world in a more positive way. It's whatever it is to make their life easier, better. And that's incredible. So that's pretty much what I stand for too. My mission is about the BS life of living a bliss soft life, where everybody's living more in their bliss softness of their power and living with more softness, which is instead of hustling and doing things that you don't like, you do things of what you really like and what brings you joy. So that's pretty awesome. I love that. I love your mission.
Funny enough, it was coaching that led me to that. I did a course of coaching in like 2009, and it connected me to what it means to be around people that you enjoy their presence and to really love the things that you do. And I was like, I want more of that feeling. And that kind of was the kind of pivotal point. I didn't end up being a coach. I coached some people, but I use coaching significantly in everything I do. And that kind of, so it's coaching that led me to that. The coaching course led me to like, I want that feeling. Yeah. And that kind of led me to where I am. So I completely relate to what you're saying for sure.
Well, that's awesome. You're meant to teach. You're like a teacher of some sort, and you do it in your own way, not necessarily coaching, but yeah, you do it with your entrepreneurship, which is awesome. So I know you often speak about creating a thriving ecosystem of businesses. What does a successful business ecosystem mean to you, and how can we start building one today?
Mm-hmm. It's a combination. I learned that from the startup ecosystem. It's a place where people come together and help each other thrive. A lot of times we've taught about business as it's a competition, and if you, it's a zero-sum game. You either win or your competitor wins. But if you're truly working on something that kind of fulfills you, you usually want something completely different than others. So for example, let's take coaching. You might think, oh, well, that's another coach. If they get a client, I either going to get that client or they're going to get them. But if you're truly connected to who you are as a coach and the kind of impact that you want to create and the kind of clients you want to work with, you will, and they're doing the same. And if you help them do that, like if you kind of, in a community where it rewards being more yourself and being more aligned with your brand and your mission, you will find that even though you're coaches, but you want to coach certain kind of people on certain things in a certain way, and they want to do it in a different way, and the people that align with you will be different than the people who align with other people. So you end up all getting what you need, and you end up thriving together. In fact, you can actually refer to each other. And that's what we do. That's what I do in business. I choose the clients that I work with. I don't just accept any client that comes in. And if they're not a fit, I will happily refer them to a perceived competitor and say, hey, this probably works with you. So I need to know who my competitors are, and I need to know what they're focused on and how do they help people. And and through those questions, like, why do you want to work with those people and what makes them a great fit for you? I help them, they help me, and we both thrive together. There's more than enough business, more than enough, clients, if you wish, and more than enough space for everyone to thrive.
I love that. Instead of having the lack mentality, you have the, you know, more abundant, where yes, everybody gets to win and we're supposed to help one another. And it's kind of like a sisterhood in a way, though, because we're, as a woman, you're taught to grow up to kind of hate each other. I don't know why, right? We're always pinned against each other or something. And so it's kind of like a sisterhood. Instead of like putting each other down, you're uplifting one another and being more positive and helpful, which makes so much sense. It does. And I totally agree with that. And that's how I try to do business or with my relationships. I try to meet everybody. And even though they may be a competitor, it's how you teach and it's who you attract. And you are going to attract who you are going to attract. That's it. Plain and simple. No one's going to take that attraction away from you unless you dim your own light, which most people do, right? They're like, probably, oh, I'm not good enough. So yeah, I'll just give it to them, or they'll just take that client from me, or have that mindset of the lack mentality. So I love that.
Well, that's why you say that, what you say no to, I talk about that in the book, is that what you say no to, you're actually saying yes to something else. It's, you have to just not just know what you're saying yes to, you have to know what you're saying no to, because that gives the space for something else. If you say yes to everything, especially in business, like, oh, it's business, they're paying us money, that's what matters. Unfortunately, that takes away from the things that you really want to do and the things that will make you thrive. I like some of our clients, the way we work with our clients is very, very particular to us, where we actually take a stake in their business and we only work with them if we're able to achieve great results for them. And the only measurement is revenue. So we have to work with customers to the point that we make decisions that are impacting their bottom line. And we can't do that unless there's a high level of trust together. And to achieve that high level of trust with them and between us, you have to know them and you have to like them and you have to go through the challenges, the good times, the bad times, all of that. And unless there is that level of trust, you can't do that with every client, and you can't do it with many clients. So you have to say no quite a bit, even to big clients and even to big projects that are perceived like, oh my God, that's a great client. I mean, one of the biggest probably things that I've done is say no to some of the largest accounts that we could have gotten, and only realizing, you know, 3 months, 6 months down the line, that was the perfect choice to make. And once you're principled and you're making choices based on those principles that align to you, once you're very well attuned to your brand, you'll find that those choices will come to you naturally, and they will be easier to make, and they will be very rewarding, and you will have a ton of great time doing great work.
But it does take time to get to that point of saying no, because when you're beginning stages, you're like, yes, 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 give me anything, everything. But then how did you finally get to a point where you figured it out and you're like, okay, you just had more confidence in your brand and yourself? Or was it just through time and just trial and error and just understanding more of your brand and what you stand for?
I think it's a combination of both. The hardest thing was to fire a client, as we say, because the idea that having more clients will solve, let's say, money problems, or that, okay, we need more money in the business, so we need to get more clients. The idea of that, I think, is an erroneous idea. The reason is, sometimes if you get the clients for the wrong reasons, they end up costing you money, because they will hog your time. They don't understand your business. There's no alignment. So it takes more effort. Whereas if you have the right clients, everything is like, even the difficult stuff are very smooth. I mean, I was just with a client before we jumped in on the podcast. And imagine that client say, we trust you implicitly. And we part of our deal is that our share of the business expires after 3 years. And they said, we don't want you to go. We want you to stay. And I mean, that is extremely rewarding because we were able to do that. Other clients is like, they're looking at ways to get out of the payment. So we make it easy. One of the ways that we do it is first, we understand that it's a mutual decision. And we tell the clients, if we're not able to deliver, and if you're not happy, we're always talking very transparently. And we talk about the challenges before we talk about the, let's say, the good times. And we bring that up. And we're honest to a fault from day one. We tell them, this is where the challenge exists. This is what we're able to do. This is what we can't do, but we will. This is how we will help you. I think that honestly, that honesty and transparency and not overpromising and not kind of trying to please the client, we don't work like that. We say, listen, this is a partnership. We'll do our part and you have to do yours. And we'll hold you accountable to that because the success is for both of us. And I think very rarely do you see people doing that. We have this idea that the customer is always right. And in many, in certain places, yes. But in other places, it's a partnership, especially when it comes to our kind of work. Mm-hmm. And I know these things may not apply to everyone, but for us, it has been immensely rewarding. So that's how we approach it.
That makes sense. It does go hand in hand with coaching. It is all you can do is help and guide them, but they have to take the action steps to do it, or else it's not going to change. They're not going to get the results. So I can only do so much, but then it takes the other person to do the rest. So that makes sense. So I know your book, The Dark Art of Life, dives into raw truths and real stories. What inspired the title, and what's one powerful message you hope readers take away from it?
So I'm looking at the, you'll be the first one to see the copy that I got.
I love it.
The image is reversed, but, and this is how it looks. So you see, like, there is illustrations in it.
That's beautiful. So, did you find someone to illustrate it, or?
Yes. So the way it worked, so the book is called The Dark Art of Life Mastery. And the idea behind it is that I felt at a certain moment that I wanted to mentor and help so many more people that I'm not getting to meet, and especially my kids. It hit me, I think it 2019, 2020, it hit me that my kids are now older and I may not be present. I think it was COVID, and I was like, I may not be present for them when they need me the most. How can I encapsulate all of my knowledge, everything that I've learned in one book? And I didn't want it to be, you know, like a process. I've read a lot of self-help books. And I didn't want it to be, you know, do 1, 2, 3. I wanted it to be something more like a conversation. So that's what led the book. And I started writing, and it was an extensive process. And what I found is I found this illustrator. And I wanted, at the time, I remember I wanted it to be, to have illustrations in the book, because I wanted, along with the writing or the reading, I wanted people to get a feeling. And I've always loved art, and I appreciate art quite a bit. And so I found this artist that I loved his art. And I said, can you read the book? And if this resonates with you, let's see if you can, you know, you can interpret those writings with your illustrations. And that's what he did. I didn't have creative directions over them. It was kind of a partnership between us where I write, he creates the illustrations. And I was blown away with how he interpret the words. And that's kind of I wanted the book to be an experience, so that people don't feel like they feel that it's something they can come back to, and they don't feel like it's something that it's a burden, or, you know, or it's a, I'll read this so I can get some pieces of information and I can apply. It was more like, if it was me having a conversation, what would I talk about? And that's that kind of the driver behind the book. And I'm over the moon today when I received the book. I was like, oh my God.
What perfect timing.
Yeah, I know.
Love it. I love that so much. I can't wait to actually dive in and read that, because your brain and your knowledge and your perception is just so amazing, truly. We just tapped into a little bit of it today, and I just learned so much from you. And I'm just so impressed. And I'm like, wow. And then now you have it in a book. I'm like, oh, even better. So we can learn more. So that's incredible. I really think, like, your experiences and all that you've been through has really taught you to be an amazing light to this world. And this is what my podcast is giving the light and the avenue for people to listen to that and to open up their perceptions and awareness, because the way you think is very positive and going forward instead of like being victim, stuck in the past. And most of us are creatures of habit, and that's what we're taught to do. And so you are an example of how to get out of that. And you don't have to be that pattern. You can be the version of what you truly want to be if that's what you put your mindset to. So that's incredible. So thank you for today.
That's so perfectly. Yeah. That's so perfectly. I'm all about living a life of choice. And that's what the book is. It's to give you the choice to live the life that you want. So you said it perfectly, Kathy.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I mean, I didn't plan on it, but see, everything is meant to be.
Yeah.
Today, what I mean. Chances that we record and your book literally physically is out and I get the honor to see it first and my listeners, you know? That's incredible. So last but not least, where can people find more about your work and your book whenever it comes out? So when does it actually come out?
It's July 8th. So I don't know when the episode's going to air, but July 8th, the book is out. So please, July 8th, go and buy it so that it actually goes up on Amazon. But you can find out more about andhuseinhalak.com or search The Dark Art of Life Mastery, and you'll find it. So I'm very much looking for the feedback and how people hopefully impact their lives in a positive way. And that's what I'm all about. And thank you very much for giving me this chance to have this wonderful conversation with you. Brilliant questions. And I wouldn't expect any less. So I loved like how you do what you do. So thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'm so honored to have you reach out and be on here to really, truly bless us with your amazing knowledge. And I truly believe, you know, knowledge is power. And so the more perception that you can tap into others who've actually done the hard work to learn and grow and to become who they are, incredible person that you are. I love tapping into those and I love picking people's brains. So this is such a fun and honorable thing for me to do today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for spending this time with me on Ignite Your Power, the Kathy Mao podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, take a deep breath and know this, you're exactly where you're meant to be. If you're feeling called to go deeper, I'd love to support you. You can work with me one-on-one or book a numerology guidance card reading with me. All are in the show links below. And if this episode supported you in any way, please share with someone who needs it, leave a review, or take a screenshot and tag me on social media. Your support helps this message reach more souls who are ready to step into their power. Until next time, keep choosing yourself, keep trusting your journey, and keep living your bliss-soft life. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!